46. Step O'Malley's pre-surgery workup was the fastest Caro had ever done. Imagery and blood work looked fine. Worried by Step's constant smoking, Caro did a lung x-ray and EKG. Lungs and heart were healthy. Some bodies could, unfairly, get away with anything. Julian worked with Step far into the night to train the DIR on her thought patterns. As Caro walked into the scrub room before Step's surgery the next morning, Ivan bounded up to her.
"Hey, Caro, Julian says to find him as soon as you're out of the OR.
Is anything wrong?"
"Nah, he just needs to tell you something."
Well, obviously. But she had no time now to question Ivan. Step was prepped and Trevor was already scrubbing.
"Thanks."
"Oh, and YN,"
Ivan said. And then, after a quick glance at her face, he added kindly,
"It means fingers crossed. You probably didn't know that."
"No," Caro said. "I didn't."
"That's okay. You can't help being so old."
Step's surgery presented no complications at all, and she was out of recovery in minimal time. Caro, herself with a sturdy constitution and accustomed to being surrounded by other sturdy bodies, since no one made it through med school, internship, and residence without the stamina of a draft horse, was nonetheless surprised by Step's resilience. Med students had nothing over war correspondents. She left Step with Trevor and found Julian in the security office, standing behind two monitoring techs who, eyes assiduously on their screens, had the air of being very careful not to attract their boss's attention. The skin around Julian's eyes was stretched taut. He said,
"Step is okay?"
"The nurses are trying to keep her in bed, and she's firing off enough emails on her phone to start a conflagration."
"Good."
He didn't smile, making no attempt at his usual charm. Caro discovered she liked him better this way. "Ivan said you want to see me?"
"Yes. I need to show you two things. Co, bring up the FBI communication and the news reports."
Hannah Kaplow sent all these this morning. The online attackers are getting worse. And now, various newspapers and TV anchors are running with the story, or what they're making into the story. Reality Check creates murderers in both virtual and real worlds. Read the screen, Caro.
She did, and her stomach went sour. The leak about Ben Clarby's murder being linked to his data theft, which Agent Kaplow had said was under investigation by the FBI, had given rise to both legitimate and illegitimate speculations about the entire project. The FBI sent Julian a sampling with hit numbers. As always, the illegitimate ones, vilely sensationalized, were winning.
"You can watch the TV cable stuff at your leisure," Julian added. "I forwarded links to you and Trevor and George. There's also this."
"Co, the FBI email?"
"It came in this morning, sent to the FBI, but addressed to me by name. Hannah says she can have at least this link traced."
"Mr. Julian Day, I see your name online. You are boss of Reality Check to go in different universes and see dead. My boyfriend do this and kill people there. Now he talk about killing you. I am scared. Please, please, please tell police. I write this at library computer."
Julian said, "Hannah is sending agents here to investigate whether the leak about Ben came from inside the project."
"I told her she fucking well better also investigate whether it came from inside the FBI.
I want you to re-emphasize to the medical staff that nobody leaves the compound, that they walk under the walkway overhang instead of crossing the open courtyard, and that everybody be careful."
"I will."
Julian pulled at the skin on his face,
a new gesture. "I need to warn George. Hannah said he might be a particular target of these fuckers. So much depends on Step O'Malley. If, in her session, she finds us credible, we can get 60 minutes. That's our best chance to reframe our story, vouched for by someone the public can trust, and to get a big outside audience to hear it."
"There's George's book," Caro said, wanting to offer him something in case Step decided her session was an illusion.
Julian turned to look at her.
"George's book?"
"Caro,
Most Americans don't read anything but fiction, certainly not weighty scientific tomes. We need 60 Minutes, which means we need Step O'Malley to undergo a life-changing experience.
In the session room, barely 36 hours later, Stephanie O'Malley didn't look to Caro like someone about to undergo a life-changing experience. She perched on the edge of the cot while Rosita checked her vital signs. Her arm rose once toward a pocket in her safari shirt, and Trevor said,
"Forget it, Step. The cigarettes still aren't there. Go cold turkey."
"Forget it yourself, you SOB.
There speaks someone with no addictions except being right. The second I'm outside again, I'm smoking."
"You're wasting a golden opportunity to quit."
"Not in this life. Or any other you try to pitch me into."
Trevor laughed and shook his head. Rosita said to Step, "Hold still."
"Alien to me." "Do it anyway," Trevor said. "This isn't a foreign war you're darting around to cover."
"Could be that it will be," Step said. This time, nobody laughed. Finally, Step lay back on the cot. The room prickled with tension. Julian and Barbara stood by their screens. No one else sat down either. George, Caro, Trevor, Rosita, all standing and leaning slightly forward, as if at a racetrack, urging on Step to the conclusion they were betting on. Step's face went blank, and the screen brightened. Her image rose from the cot, glanced around, and went out the door. The courtyard of Wing 3 was unchanged, except for a woman sitting on a stone bench by the flower bed. The woman rose, and Caro heard Trevor suck in a quick breath. Step and the woman stared at each other for a heartbeat. 2, 5. She was taller than Step, younger, with green eyes, dark skin, and shoulder-length hair of a startling rich mahogany. Blood stained the front of her white tunic. Step burst into tears. Then they were in each other's arms, holding on as if they might never let go, rocking back and forth. Step's head came only to the woman's shoulder. She had to stand on tiptoe for the woman's passionate kiss. Julian did something, and the figures, although still present on the screen, blurred. As they sank onto the grass, he said, "Maybe some privacy." 10 blurry minutes later, the screen went dark and Step's eyes opened. She lay so immobile that Camilla and Caro both moved toward the cot. Trevor was faster, reaching Step just as the journalist sat up and covered her face with her hands.
"Step?" Trevor said.
"Not now," she said,
the words muffled by her fingers.
I need to think about it. It was real, wasn't it? Trevor? It was real."
"Yes," Trevor said. Caro knew what she was seeing. For Stephanie Kathleen O'Malley, war-experienced, jaded, hard-smoking Step, reality had just turned inside out like a sock. George said simply, echoing Trevor, but meaning so much more,
"Yes, it was real. Now, Ms. O'Malley, what will you say about us?"
Julian raced off to call the PR firm about 60 Minutes. Trevor sat with Step, holding her hand. They talked softly. Caro, feeling like an intruder, went to her room and searched on her laptop for images related to Stephanie O'Malley. Far down the scroll, she found a single image of the dark-skinned, mahogany-haired woman with green eyes. Jamila Abrika, an Amazigh, formerly called Berber. She'd been killed in the Tunisian riots 3 years ago. The links to Step's works included her piece about the riots, Chaos in Carthage. Precisely detailed, clearly written, wide in scope, the article packed an emotional punch. It included many names, but not Jamila's. Step had kept that relationship private, even after Jamila was dead. Did that make Step, despite her avowals, more disposed to accept a hallucination as real? Or, given the journalistic skepticism displayed in the article about pretty much anything told her by any official, less disposed to accept delusions?
Caro, despite Steps and Trevor's and Julian's and everybody else's certainty about their sessions, still could not decide what she believed. She just could not decide.